So a reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, chapter 10, verse 7. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Abhashas cha Nirodhas cha Yato Stadyavasi Yate Sa Ashraya Param Brahma Paramatmenti Sabdyate Abhasascha Nirodhascha Yato stadyavasi yate sa ashraya param brahma paramatmeti sabyate. Someone can chant. Word for word. Abhasaha, the cosmic manifestation. Cha, and. Nirodaha, and its winding up. Cha, also. Yataha, from the source. Asti, is. Adyavasiyate, become manifested. Saha, he. Ashrayaha, reservoir. Param, the supreme. Brahma, being. Paramatma, the Supersoul. Iti, thus. Sabyate, called. Translation. The Supreme One who is celebrated as the Supreme Being or the Supreme Soul is the supreme source of the cosmic manifestation as well as its reservoir and winding up. Thus, he is the supreme fountainhead, the absolute truth. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Synonyms for the supreme source of all energies, as explained in the very beginning of the Srimad Bhagavatam, are Janmad Yasya Yata Vadanti Tat Tattva Vidas Tatvam Yaj Gyanam Advaityam Brahmeti Paramatmeti Bhagavan iti sabyate, called Parambrahma, Paramatma, or Bhagavan. The word iti used here in this verse completes the synonyms and thus indicates Bhagavan. This will be further explained in the later verses, but this Bhagavan ultimately means Lord Krishna, because the Srimad Bhagavatam has already accepted the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Krishna. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam, the original source of all energies, or the Sanam Bonam, is the absolute truth, which is called Param Brahma, etc. And Bhagavan is the last word of the absolute truth. But even with the synonyms for Bhagavan, such as Narayana, Vishnu, and Purusha, the last word is Krishna, as confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita. Aham sarvasya pravavo matat sarvam pravarjante, etc. Besides that, the Srimad Bhagavatam is a representation of Lord Krishna as a sound incarnation of the Lord. Krishne swa damo pagate dharma gana dibi saha kalo nasta drisam esha puranarko duno ditaha. Srimad Bhagavatam 1.3.43. Thus, by general conclusion, Lord Krishna is the ultimate source of all energies, and the word Krishna means that. And to explain Krishna or the science of Krishna, the Srimad Bhagavatam has been prepared. In the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, this truth is indicated in the questions and answers by Suta Goswami and great sages like Sanaka, and in the first and second chapters of the canto, this is explained. In the third chapter, this subject is more explicit, and in the fourth chapter, even more explicit. In the second canto, the absolute truth as a personality of Godhead is further emphasized, and the indication is the Supreme Lord Krishna. The summary of Srimad Bhagavatam in four verses, as we have already discussed, is succinct. This Supreme Personality of Godhead in the ultimate issue is confirmed by Brahma in his Brahma Samhita as Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha. So it is concluded in the third canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. The complete subject matter is elaborately explained in the 10th and 11th cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam. in the matter of the changes of the manus or manvataras, such as the Swayambhuva manvatara and the Chakshursha manvatara, as they are discussed in the 3rd, 4th, 5th, 6th, and 7th cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. Lord Krishna is indicated. In the 8th canto, the Vaivasvata Manvatara explains the same subject indirectly, and in the 9th canto, the same purport is there. In the 12th canto, the same is further explained, specifically regarding the different incarnations of the Lord. Thus, it is concluded by studying the complete Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Sri Krishna is the ultimate sanam bonam, or the absolute, or the ultimate source of all energy. And according to the grades of worshippers, the indications of the nomenclature may be differently explained as Narayana, Brahma, Paramatma, etc. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bhastaya Bhutale Shimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharne Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paskacha Deshadarne. So as stated in this purport, there is the creation and the winding up of the creation. So in the beginning of creation, as stated in the Upanishads, that there was only Narayana. There was no Lord Shiva, no Brahma, there was no fire, no water, nor heaven, nor earth, nor sun, nor moon, nor stars in the sky. There was simply Lord Narayana. And then Lord Narayana, Lord Brahma took birth. From Narayana, the patriarchs took birth. From Narayana, Indra took his birth. From Narayana, the 8 Vasus took their birth. From Narayana, the 11 Rudras took their birth. And from Narayana, the 8 Adityas took their birth. So, and Narayana is an expansion of Krishna. So Krishna is the original source of all living entities. And in this creation is so much, this creation takes place by the breathing of Mahavishnu. He breathes in and he breathes out, and this is the whole manifestation of all the universes. So like this universe takes place, the duration of this material universe is over 311 trillion years. So in another 11, so we're like halfway through that. And so after that, we will go back into unless we go back to God, we will go back into the body of Mahavishnu. So in this way, there's so many devastations taking place. There's a partial devastation where there's destruction for 72,000 years, where there's 36,000 years of fire and 36,000 years of rain, torrents of rain, wind, and waves. In this way, the living entities are suffering like anything. And also at the end of this age, Lord Kalki comes. And he simply, with his sword on his horse, he just goes around and just kills all the demonic living entities. There's only a few pious souls or a few devotees left, but mostly he just kills everybody because people are so demoniac. And so this age is a very precarious position. Srila Prabhupada mentions that it's very... It's very precarious. He said, get out. Don't come back here to this Kali Yuga. It won't be so easy the next time around. You should leave this place. So that was his instructions. And so there's constant annihilation. But as we know, we are spirit soul. We are actually beyond all this creation and destruction. The soul's been explained. We are the soul. The soul is within the body. And the soul is eternal. As Krishna states in the Bhagavad Gita, for the soul there is neither birth nor death at any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever-existing in primeval. He is not slain when the body is slain. He is everlasting, indestructible, unbreakable, imperishable, insoluble, immutable. He can never be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burnt such as by fire, nor moistened by water, nor dried up or withered by the wind. So in this way, we are eternal. We're beyond, or we're transcendental to these creations and devastations. But just like in a dream, if you're dreaming that you're being eaten by a tiger, then even though there's no tiger there, still you have to suffer the pain of being eaten by a tiger. So this is our predicament. We're falsely identifying with this material body and this world, this temporary world, and therefore we have to suffer like anything. But we are actually eternal and full of knowledge and full of bliss. So as stated, is quoted in here in the purport, Prabhupada mentions the verse from the 10th chapter, 8th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. So Krishna is the source of all the different incarnations of the Lord, of Narayana, of Vishnu, Mahavishnu, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He's the source. And he's like compared to the original candle. And he's lighting all the other candles of Vishnu. So they all have the same power. But Krishna, he has various qualities that are only manifested in him. As mentioned in the Nectar Devotion, there are 64, Krishna has 64 different qualities. So Vishnu has 60 of those. But Lord Krishna has four others that are not even manifested by Lord Vishnu. Namely, he has wonderful activities. He's surrounded by loving devotees. He attracts everyone by his playing on his flute. And he has exquisite beauty. So these have been explained in the Nectar Devotion. Krishna says, in terms of his wonderful activities, he says, although I perform so many extraordinary pastimes, he said, still when I think of the Rasa Lila, then I become eager to have the Rasa Lila, to like that. So in this way, he performs his activities. It's mentioned in the Nectar Devotion that specifically his childhood pastimes are very attractive like that. And also he's surrounded by loving devotees. The example is given of one gopi. She told Krishna, we have met you here at night, but we consider this night to be very, very small. The duration of this night to be very small. And she said, what to speak of this night? Even if we had the night time of Lord Brahma, we could consider it a very short time. So as we know from the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Brahma lives, or his night is 4,300,000,000 years. So for a devotee of the Lord, such a time is considered very short. And the devotees also, when they're gone from Krishna, they consider a moment to be like 12 years or more. Just like the gopis, they would just simply blink, blinking of their eyes is a short duration of that time. That's considered like a yuga. And they would criticize the engineer of the universe, Lord Brahma, for being a dunce, for creating such eyelids that obstructed their vision of seeing Krishna. So this is the consideration of devotees. They have a different consideration of time, a different consideration of this material world, which is the actual reality, while everything else is simply an illusion. An illusion of its conception, not of the... Some people, like the Mayavadis or some impersonalists, they say that it's all false, it's not real. No, we understand it's real, but it's simply temporary. Or we don't take it as an object for an enjoyment, because it's not an object of enjoyment. And also, the quality of Krishna is he attracts everyone by playing on his flute. So it is stated there in the Nectar Devotion that when Krishna plays on his flute, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Indra all become bewildered, and they humbly bow down and become grave upon studying the sound of Krishna's flute. And Krishna's last quality is he has exquisite beauty. So one day Krishna saw his reflection on a jeweled foreground, and he said that I've never seen such a beautiful form. Although it is my own form, still I want to embrace, I still like Radharani, I want to embrace it and enjoy celestial pleasure. So this is Krishna's form. He's even attracted to his own form. It's so beautiful. And Srila Prabhupada mentions in that connection that Krishna being absolute, there's no difference between himself and his own reflection. So therefore, Krishna's reflection and Krishna's picture are the same. So in this way, we can understand that Krishna and his deity are also non-different, Krishna being absolute. So as stated in that verse from the Bhagavad Gita, I am the source of all spiritual material worlds. Everything emanates from me. The wise who know this perfectly engage in my devotional service and worship me with all their hearts. So those who are devotees, those who have love for Krishna, they also love the universe because it comes from Krishna. Just like if you love your father, then you love your brother also. If you love your country, you also love your countrymen. Just like Srila Prabhupada gave the example, if you're out of your country, like if you're an American and you see another American in a foreign country, the attraction is there because they come from your country and you ask them, oh, where are you from? Like that. So that's natural. That's automatic. Because you have love for the country. So, like Srila Prabhupada gave the example of Magari the hunter. So Magari the hunter, he was engaged in very sinful activities of killing animals half dead. He was taught this by his father to kill them so they wouldn't die immediately and they would suffer in pain until they died in agony. And Narada Muni saw this. And he told Magari, the hunter, he said, if you're going to kill them completely. Don't let them suffer. This is sinful activities. So by the association of Narada Muni, he gave up his bad activities. And Narada Muni told him to engage in devotional service and he'll take care of all his needs. And then one day, as Narada Muni was going to visit his disciple, Magari. He came with Parvat Muni, and they came there, and Magari was going to greet them, but in front of him were some ants, so he's jumping here and there to avoid stepping on the ants. So just see the wonderful activities of a devotee. Before, he was engaged in so many sinful activities, but now he's not prepared to kill even an ant. So this is the quality of a devotee, not that, oh, I love my countrymen, I love the men and ladies in my country, but to hell with the animals, to hell with the cows, the goats, the serpents. No, he cares about every living entity. Krishna is the father. He's the father of all living entities. Krishna says that. There's 8,400,000 different species of life. So he knows that they're all the sons of Krishna. We're all brothers. In this way, he loves everyone. He doesn't want to exploit anyone. So this love is there. And so how do we utilize that love? How do we give that love? Prabhupada gave that common example of the tree. If you love the root of the tree, then you will love all the branches, the flowers, and the fruits. So to love the tree, so that means, what does that mean to love the tree? That means you give your attention to the root, you water the root, and by watering the root of the tree, then everything becomes nourished. And if you love your body, you love your finger also. But if you don't care for your body, if you don't care about your health, you don't care about your finger. So the same principle: if you love your body, you love your body by supplying food to the stomach, and this way all the different parts are being nourished. Not that, oh, I love my body, so let me get food to my nose, my eyes, my ears, my different hairs. No. Simply by offering food to the stomach, one nourishes the body. So love means service. That's the definition of love. Without service, there's no love without service, and there's no understanding without service. One cannot understand Krishna without service. And understanding Krishna means to understand his name, his quality, his pastimes. Like those who don't perform service to Krishna, sometimes they hear various pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam and other Vedic literatures, whether it's Krishna or his different incarnations, and they can't understand. To them, it seems like mythology. They can't understand it. The reason is because they don't perform any service to Krishna. Therefore, they cannot understand. You can't understand Krishna by your blunt material senses. That is not possible. But one actually gets full understanding, full realization when Krishna, or understanding when Krishna reveals this to him. And this service, so one may say, well, how do I serve Krishna? So this service begins from the tongue. This is where service begins, simply by utilizing the tongue. And the tongue has two functions, to taste and to vibrate. So by glorifying Krishna, by chanting the holy name of Krishna, and by tasting Krishna Bhasadam, then one will be engaged in service. In this way, one could understand Krishna. And so this love means service. It means to give and take. There are six loving exchanges between devotees and the Supreme Lord, which is to give gifts and receive gifts, to reveal one's mind and confidence and inquire confidentially, and to give bhasadam and to accept bhasadam. So in giving bhasadam and accepting bhasadam, we as devotees, we're invited to come and take bhasadam. But Srila Prabhupada mentions that the function is that if one's invited to take bhasadam, then one should not simply take prasadam, but one should bring some something like fruits. In this way, the fruits are also offered and distributed as prasadam. So it's simply not simply taking, but also giving. If one simply just takes and takes and takes and doesn't give, there's no reciprocation of love. It's simply exploitation. And we have to inquire confidentially. So this is done by hearing Bhagavad Gita. Krishna gives confidential knowledge by speaking Bhagavad Gita in this way. By hearing it, we get that. And if we should submit to Krishna, we should reveal our minds to him that if we're suffering in this way, and that we're being tossed in the ocean of material existence, please help me. I'm simply being tossed here and there, and I'm suffering. Please get me out of this situation. So this material world is simply simply like an ocean of material existence. One is simply in the ocean, just like if you're put in the middle of the, or even by the coast, right by the coast of the Pacific Ocean. If there's some waves there, one and they're very strong, one becomes helpless. Sometimes on the shore there's these rip tides, and if you don't know how to swim properly to get out of them, they just pull you out farther and farther, and eventually you drown. So there's danger there. But in the middle of the ocean, if there's big waves, there's no way one could avoid those. But people are so foolish, they think they could make adjustments in the material world and become happy. But this is simply first-class foolishness. It is not possible. This material world is compared to a hospital, and we are simply madmen running in the streets. Running the streets. But Krishna is our father, so we have the richest father. But someone is thinking, oh, give this person some food, that will help him. Give him some clothes. Give him a house. But still, the madness remains. So this world is for curing this madness, and to send us back home, just like the hospital. The hospital is there to get us better and then send us back home. But men are of the mistaken idea to make a permanent settlement in this madhouse, just like the hog. The hog is eating stool, and he is thinking, oh, I'm enjoying like anything. And after eating this nice stool, I shall have sex with any she-hog of my choosing, be her my wife, my mother, my sister, my daughter. It doesn't matter. And I have to get a very nice house for my children. And this way, the madness goes on. He is thinking that I am enjoying. But there's no enjoyment in this material world. It's simply suffering. Suffering on and on and on. So we have to understand this knowledge by devotional service. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, as a blazing fire burns to ashes, firewood, O Arjuna. So does the fire of knowledge burn to ashes the results of all material activities. So by engaging in devotional service, we become purified and be able to go back to home, back to Godhead engaging in the different processes of devotional service. First, we have to be brought up to the mode of goodness. And by we're brought up to the mode of goodness by developing the brahminical qualifications, or different brahminical qualifications, such as being very neat and clean, rising early in the morning, attending Mangalartik, So in this way, following the four regular principles. So by doing these things, we become purified, just like being very neat and clean. Prabhupada mentions how that dressing the deity isn't as important as cleansing the temple. Not that the temple remains dirty and we simply dress the deity. No, both things are important. And we should keep the temple very neat and clean. That means the whole temple site. And as much as we keep the temple neat and clean, we will keep our hearts neat and clean. And in this way, we can easily understand Krishna. But if our heart is filled up with garbage, then it will not be possible for us to understand Krishna. So this is a process of devotional service. By engaging in this, then we sincerely and seriously, we will reap the ultimate perfection of life, which is prema bhakti. There are different levels of devotional service, shraddha, sadhu sangha, bhajana kriya, anartana vritti, then there's anista, aruchi, ashakti, bhava, prema. And prema is the highest perfection of life. It's a reservoir of all pleasure. And by attaining that, we will not never again depart from the truth. So we have to attain the highest platform. In this way, we will never fall down from that position. But even if you're on the stage of bhava, as Bharata Maharaj, he was in the stage of bhava, but he became attached to a deer, and he fell down. And Bilvamangala Thakur, in a previous life, he also attained the stage of bhava, but somehow or another he fell down, and he took his birth as Bilvamangala Thakur, but then eventually attained perfection. But we don't want to wait. As Srila Prabhupada and the Acharyas mentioned, don't wait. Go back to home, back to God in this lifetime. Don't take another birth. Don't say, well, I'll just take another birth again, or I'll become a hog and dog in Vrindavan. We should not think like that. We should make this our last life and go back to home, back to Godhead. So I could stop there. Are there any questions on any of these points?
So the question is that you were mentioning that Krishna is absolute and is not different between him and Krishna being in the picture, right? So then sometimes we see that, for example, in the Pujari room, there's a lot of carefully, the preparations that we do for Krishna's bhoga or food is done with quality, and devotees are eager to get the Mahaprasadam from Krishna because it's offered right there in the altar. So now, on the other side, we have the big Didi kitchen, who may not necessarily be like the same quality as we put in the Pujari room. And if it's so, if we do have the same love and attention and care and quality, wouldn't be like, instead of offering in the picture in the kitchen, just bring a little bit and put it in the altar here so devotees will get mad for Mahaprasadam. But I see that mostly they don't even pay much attention of the Mahaprasadam offering from the Diri kitchen, that the one offered from the Diri kitchen, yeah, but not from the big kitchen. And, sometimes we see that live members, they come and bring some sugar. The ingredients may not be suitable, or canned food. Canned food cannot be offered in the Diri department there because it goes to the deity directly here, to Krishna. But in the picture, some devotees might think, well, it's just the picture here. We can get away with that. So what is your comment in that?
Yeah, so that's there. So, Krishna is in his picture. So if you offer to Krishna's picture, then Krishna accepts the offering if he's done with love and devotion. But we should understand what love and devotion means also. Love and devotion means we follow all the rules and regulations. So if you live in the temple, then you should eat that food which is offered to the deities. And so we should make it a point to offer everything to the deities. So, for example, we have breakfast. So breakfast is, you know, we have breakfast at, after the class, we have breakfast. So there's no reason, no good reason why the whole breakfast can't be offered to Rukmini Dorkadish. When I joined this temple in 72, everything was offered to Rukmini Dorkadish. The breakfast, the lunch, I would cook, you know, the breakfast we would have, even it was, sometimes we just have puffies or oatmeal or halava or upma was offered to Rukmini Dorkadish. The milk was offered, the fruit was offered. We offered ginger root and chickpeas to the deities because they served that at breakfast. Everything was offered to Rukmini Dorkadish. The lunch, I used to cook the rice, the dal, and chapatis every day, and they were all offered to Rukmini Dorkadish, you know. So anyway, there may be, somebody may make an argument, well, the lunch is a little bit difficult because of this, that, or whatever reason. But I don't see any reason why the breakfast can't be offered to Rukmini Dorkadish. There's no reason why it can't. So we have to follow this. Yeah, you say it's offered to a pitcher in the kitchen, but we have to understand the instruction of Prabhupada is one should eat in the temple. And he said, you know, especially if one lives at the temple, one should eat at the temple, and that eating at the temple means that's a food is offered to the deity in the temple. So that's his instruction. So we just have to follow that. Well, it's the thing with the quality has to be up to standard too, and then there's so many. Srila Prabhupada mentions in the I think it's the Chaitanya Charitamrita. He said to offer the deities nice foods like in America is not a problem. You have so many, you know, vegetables and fresh things you could offer the deity. It's not an issue in your country, you know. So it's not a question. You know, I mean, you have to consider that. You know, it's like we should eat Krishna Bhashadam. I mean, in emergency situations, you could practically eat anything, you know. But we're not in that emergency situation. So we should offer nice things to the deity. And then also, it helps you cut down on enjoying the tongue like that. Because if you think, well, I want to offer this nice thing to Krishna, so it has to be offerable, you know. If you think, well, this is not very nice to offer to Krishna, but I like its taste, so let me offer it a pitcher of Krishna and eat it anyway. It just, like, doesn't make any sense. So this way we have to follow all the instructions, and this way we're in a safe position. Okay? Anybody else would like to say anything? Okay, back there.
Jai, thank you for the very bona fide class. I have four, like, small technical questions. In the beginning, you quoted this verse about how from Narayan the Adichas come, from Narayan the Vasus come. And remember that verse? Okay. So I always got the impression that from Narayan Brahma came, and then from everything else came from Brahma. So is that verse, it kind of sounds like everything, you know, things are coming from directly from Narayan. But what is the actual situation? Is it Narayan, Brahma, and then everything else? Or is it Narayan, Brahma, Narayan, Adichas, Narayan, Vasus, Narayan?
Yeah, well, anyway, we know that we got the description in Srimad Bhagavatam that first there was, the first created being was Lord Brahma. And then from a Lord Brahma, like, for example, from a Lord Shiva came from the forehead of Lord Brahma, for example. So, and the different living entities came from Brahma, his different sons, or the patriarchs, they came from Brahma. But there's that there. That's a verse mentioned that Prabhupada quotes. He gave the Sanskrit. I just gave the English to it. It's in the 10th chapter, 8th verse of the purport. He mentions, from Narayan is born Brahma, from Narayan is born the patriarchs, from Narayan is born. So you could see it. He's ultimately gives birth to the Adityas, the Rudras too, but not in the way you may think, but like that. There's also different creations like that. So sometimes in the creations, like it's stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, that there's description of how the creation takes place. I think it's about the different coverings of the universe. And then there's one verse explains how they appeared in a different way. And Srila Prabhupada mentions that in the purport, that sometimes the creation is according to the creation, things are done in a different way. But so anyway, that verse is from the Bhagavad Gita. So I just quoted from that verse.
Thank you. So you mentioned also there's a 72,000 year devastation. So I was wondering exactly when does that take place? That doesn't take place at the end of the Kali Yuga, right? Obviously not. That takes place at the end of what? Like a life of Manu or the day of Brahma or the life? Okay, and you mentioned that the living entities are suffering greatly. Are the living entities alive during that time? You know, during that 72,000-year annihilation, first when there's the scorching sun and then there's the torrential rain. Are there actually living entities? Okay, because, I mean... Most likely there's no living entities at that point. No problem. And the last one was that you mentioned about Bilvamangala Thakur, how he was in Bhava, and then in his previous life. I remember, but yeah, was he in Bhava? Is his status someplace that he was it reached Bhava in a previous life? Because I know in this, okay, done. Thank you. Very bona fide class. Thank you very much.
All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.